When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello friends, the Game Day Preview podcast is stacked with big names and big games this week. You'll hear from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on Rashford's injury and Troy Deeney on Nigel Pearson. United, the only team to halt the leaders, go to Liverpool hoping for the same ending in the sequel. Manchester City's leading man got the headlines last weekend, but the best supporting role has gone to Sterling over the last few years and he had his feet up last week. Good luck, Palace. Also, tepid Tottenham take on Watford as game day gets underway. I'll tell you why Watford will score in that match. And it's got nothing to do with Jose going full platoon as another chance is missed by his Harry-less forward line. Plus, Dream Team tips, Chelsea go to a bogey ground, and each one of the rest of the Premier League games given full attention. This is Game Day, the Premier League preview pod from TalkSport.
This is Game Day, Premier League preview show.
And we've gone a little bit Manchester United heavy on the pod today with title winner Paul Parker and the writer of a few titles, Alex Crook. Hello. Try to leave your bias at the door if you can. Did you enjoy that riveting cup tie midweek, by the way? I thought it was telling that when I asked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer afterwards about the performance, he said, well, you don't get an easier draw if you win 5-0.
No, very true. It was attritional, wasn't it? And I have to say, I think it's a good advert for scrapping replays. Not in games where you've got a Newcastle-Rochdale scenario, but I think if you've got two teams from the same division who mutually agree before the initial tie, if this is a draw, we're going to go to extra time and penalties, get it done tonight. I think that can only be positive for the competition.
I like that idea. I mean, I wasn't for all this getting rid of replays because I do feel for the lesser sides who do get the opportunity to replay to get the second game, especially to get a second game against a Premier League side. Say they draw Manchester United, is going to be a minimum of 65,000. Great. But don't take away their little bit of bonus that they can earn during the season. So that's a great idea after that last night.
But the problem is you're not going to ever do that because it's not equitable, is it? So there may be replays in certain games and not in others. And you can't have a competition where someone could end up playing double the amount of games en route to the final than somebody else just because they play Premier League opposition. Surely what you do is you just say, if you're the smaller team, so if you're lower in the table than the team that you're playing, you get the gate receipts, no matter what the situation is. It's a one-off game, no extra time, go straight to penalties. Then if you are a Rochdale, instead of actually getting a replay, what you might do is get a better chance of going through to the next round because it goes just straight to spot kicks. That could be a solution, right?
Yeah, equally, I still think my idea is better.
Of course you do. There is a shock, everybody. Anyone who knows that Alex Crook is not surprised by that. Talking of people who think they're always right, we've got a Troy Deeney interview to come ahead of our big game day match this week. We'll do that in a bit. But first of all, a bit of red on red action.
Thrown into Firmino, headed by Alderweireld, breaks to Jordan Henderson, then Salah, then Firmino. Lovely touch, lovely shot, lovely goal. Roberto Firmino, the coolest man at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium with the ball at feet. Chops out left, fires right, and Liverpool lead by a goal to nil.
Quick corner.
Third goal! Brilliant. Anthony Martial! Bullet header into the corner. Old Trafford goes absolutely ballistic. And surely a precious 3 points are now secure for Manchester United. Two goals in 3 minutes, the first of the day for Martial. It's Man United 3, Norwich City 0.
And we will get to how that big game is going to unfold in just a second. But all eyes are going to be on Marcus Rashford and the team news and whether or not he is fit to play. This is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer told me in the tunnel last night.
You did rest some players tonight, including Marcus Rashford. You brought him on. He lasted 14 and a half minutes and had to come off with an injury. Yep. What is the latest with him?
Well, he's getting treatment now and hopefully we can get him back for Sunday, but I'm not sure. He's struggled with his back lately and he got another one. So that backfired a little bit. Okay, yeah, we got the goal. He was involved in the goal, but then it might have cost him Sunday.
So, Paul, he said it backfired. It was the wrong thing to do. He praised the fact that we'd noticed that Rashford had had a back injury. We saw him come off against Norwich holding his back, and then he did the same after 15 minutes last night. Why did they use him?
Maybe because Ollie wanted to get through the next stage. He saw the game coming up, and he just wanted to get through to that next stage and maybe push it too far. If he'd done it and it come off for him, they win 1-0, everyone would have said yes. But I think when the injury happened, they were 1-0 up. Why did he allow him to come off and go back again with a back injury? No one really knows the full extent of a back injury until you can get specialist people, the right people to look at him after the event. But to put him back on again when you're 1-0 up doesn't make any sense at all. And that's the bit I believe that people will question him on.
OK, if he is absent, Alex, it makes a massive difference to how this game could unfold.
Just a bit. I mean, first and foremost, we shouldn't be surprised that Marcus Rashford's back has given way because, let's face it, he's been carrying the hopes of the club for the last 2 years.
Hey.
So no real surprise there. But it's a massive problem because I've spoken about this in the past. Anthony Martial just doesn't do it for me. You know, they've given him this massive lucrative contract. Is he a top-class centre-forward? Not for me. Does he care enough? Does he work hard enough? Does he try and make things happen? Again, not for me. Marcus Rashford is the only top-quality striker that United have got at the moment. Mason Greenwood might get there. If he doesn't play, Paul, I don't think they've got a chance.
No, they've got a massive problem. We're talking about Martial. I look at Martial and I look at him and I think to myself, he should be in a Las Vegas casino there playing blackjack or something, because you look at his face, he hasn't got a tell, has he?
No.
You don't know what's coming next. The thing about it, they're trying him through the middle. They're hoping that it works out. It's worked out now and again, and that's the problem. But the problem is as well is that Rashford likes to play that side himself. The problem is that he does both jobs better.
Yeah,
he's more effective as from the left coming into the middle than what Martial is. And yet, when he goes in the middle, okay, he does a better job then than Martial. So in theory, what are we getting from Martial?
Well, what we're getting from Martial is inconsistency, because he goes through these rashes of scoring goals, then not scoring for ages, then scoring goals again, then he's injured. And he disrupts the whole rhythm of the team, because you can't rely on him. You can't build your team around him. You can Rashford, and the fact that he's out is going to be a big issue. We have said this for months, though. This is the sort of game that Manchester United relish playing, isn't it? You know, even against Spurs, Liverpool gave up chance after chance. I mean, is their run of seven straight Premier League clean sheets going to hold this weekend, do you think, Alex?
I think, again, it would depend entirely on the fitness of Marcus Rashford. If Rashford is fit, and if he's fully fit, there's no point in putting him in if he's half fit. I think he's going to take a big ask when we saw him hobble down the tunnel the other night holding his back to get back to full fitness for Sunday. I just don't think it's going to happen. If it doesn't, I can't see how United are going to use their strength, which is clearly to try and hit Liverpool on the counter-attack. And also, of course, yeah, they've done it well against Manchester City, but that Manchester City defence didn't have Virgil van Dijk at the heart of it. They did give away some chances against Spurs, but I worry, do United have the firepower to get beyond van Dijk and Alexander-Arnold and Robertson without Marcus Rashford? And again, I have to say, I think the answer is probably no. And also, I think Liverpool are slightly more streetwise than Manchester City. They're going to know what United are going to do, and Jurgen Klopp will come up with a game plan to combat that. And as we've seen time and again this season, if teams don't play to United's strength, then more often than not, they struggle. And that was the case against Wolves for long periods as well.
There's some quirky stats surrounding this game. United have lost only one of the last eight against Liverpool. They seem to raise their game whenever they play the Reds. Mohamed Salah has never scored for Liverpool against Manchester United. Firmino has never scored against Manchester United in the Premier League. And Mane's got one, I think. Why do you think that is?
I'm shaking my head that you've gone and said, that's three of them. That means it's going to be 3-0 already. I cannot believe you've gone and done that, Sam. That's absolutely, that is a curse.
The commentator's curse is meant to be at the end of the show, yeah?
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, we'll do that later.
How you've put that one out there, and that says it all, really. It seems like that's going to happen. I have to say, is when you talk about those three players, they are the most important part of that team, especially Firmino in that front three as well. And for them not to have delivered tells you how well United have done in the previous game. I really don't see this happening again. I said that before the Manchester City game when we saw what happened there. But that can't happen again because, as Alex has just mentioned, they're better defensively, more streetwise. And you have to remember, Sam, me and you sat and watched Manchester United up against one of the poorest defences in the Premier League in Arsenal. And Arsenal sussed it, didn't they?
Yeah, they were dreadful that night, United.
Major asset for Manchester United is Brandon Williams. I think he's coming to the team. He's probably going to be the first choice left back going forward. I thought he was excellent against Norwich, but also excellent in the midweek game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Interesting battle between him and Trent Alexander-Arnold this weekend. But Gary Neville's tweet actually caught my eye more than anything else. He said, "I like Brandon Williams. What I like about him specifically is that he has the look in his eye of someone that would eat his opponent's nose to win the match. Keep going, kid. Oh, he can play football as well, which is also a bonus." What do you like about him, apart from the fact that he looks as if he's going to eat someone's nose, Paul?
Well, I don't want to get involved in talking about eating snot, to be perfectly honest. It doesn't really figure with me doing something like that. I've said about
it. But it does help that Liverpool. It does help that Manchester United could be Liverpool's bogey team.
Okay, right. Let me start again. I've been talking about this. I've been talking about him for a long time, and I initially started talking about him, I think, when I was sat with this young man next to me when we were doing the European games, and I kept saying all the time, he comes in, he does well. Sir Alex Ferguson, when he has young players and they do well, he doesn't want to leave them out because he's worried about their confidence after a little while. This lad should have been playing a long while ago. And as far as I'm concerned, there isn't any competition between him and Luke Shaw. There's one winner and one winner only, and that is him. He has to play every single game now when possible.
OK, Liverpool going for the full set. If they win this game on Sunday, it will mean they've beaten every single Premier League team this campaign. Watford against Tottenham is first up on game day at 12:30 on TalkSport and around the world on Premier League Live. Tottenham were pretty average again in midweek, but Watford will bring the fire, especially at home. Nigel Pearson has lost just one game out of the seven matches he's been in charge for, amassing four victories, two draws. They are the Premier League's form team, better than City. Yes, Liverpool played less games during that period, but they are on top of the form table. It has coincided with the return of Troy Deeney as well, who, after their most recent victory, spoke to Alex Crook.
It takes a collective. It's all right saying it, but you need rules, you need standards, and you need managers to keep that attention high as well. It's no point having clear out meetings and, you know, people aren't doing it to the level, they're still playing the following week, myself included. I've been caught all of being shit at times, but played in the following week, so I know if my standards drop, I won't be in. If he had a foreign last name, we'd all be saying he's the Messiah.
Ah, yes, the Messiah, Nigel Pearson. Basically, I mean, what he's saying there, he's having a pop at the previous regime, isn't he? I mean, you spoke to him, what was the sort of feeling?
Do you know what? It was one of my favourite interviews for a long time. It was in the Mix Zone. He'd just done Sky TV. He agreed to come and speak to the written, and in my case, the broadcast media. And we had 9.5 minutes, and it was absolutely captivating, absolutely engaging, because there was a player not afraid to speak his mind. You heard him use the S word there. He also said, if I praise Nigel Pearson anymore, I'd be licking his backside. And then, of course, he came out with a Messiah quote. It was great copy. But it was brilliant to hear a player not media trained, just speaking from the heart and speaking like a fan, and we don't get enough of that in the modern game. He didn't offend anybody. It was just brilliant, and you can see actually why he's such a leader and such a talisman in the dressing room. I've got to say, I've seen a lot of Watford since Nigel Pearson came in. The transformation has been absolutely remarkable, and it just shows the quality of having a proper manager in charge. He's only lost two, Nigel Pearson, of his last 15 Premier League games. That goes back to his final weeks at Leicester when he produced their miracle relegation escape as well. He's not only going to keep Watford up, they're probably going to finish mid-table, and they were doomed 4 weeks ago.
they're not that bad a team initially. They've just been badly managed, haven't they, really?
Absolutely.
Certain players have come along and treated it as a circus, and they've rolled their luck. And he's come in, and I could imagine he's rolled his sleeves up and he's mostly gone to his bosses and said, look, this is what I want to do. Be expecting to hear from some of these players' agents whinging about the way I've been treating their players. If you want me to do that job, that's the way I work. If not, I can't do it. And somewhere along the line, it's gone that way. And when you've got someone like Troy Deeney, who, in theory, if you took away the football kit and put overalls on him, he would be a builder, wouldn't he, to be perfectly honest? If you put a pair of, like, Timberlands on him, he would be a builder. And
he's just a normal bloke who happens to be very good at playing football.
And like you said about not being media trained, he might be, but he might say, well, that means I don't say anything, I just give people the same sound bites.
Exactly.
He also has been a little bit fortunate, Nigel Pearce, in the fact that Deeney has come back from injury. Ismail Assar has beaten out with injury and he's come back. And a couple of other players have got their confidence back as well. That's also helped. But ultimately, it's about clarity of message, isn't it? If you're Nigel Pearson, he's even in the game against Liverpool, which they lost, they didn't play that badly because he had them on the front foot right from the very off and competing. And if you compete, doesn't matter, even if you are playing a team that is technically better than you, you give yourself a chance, don't you?
You certainly do, and that's what's lacking. When you see a lot of teams in this Premier League season, a lot of them don't really compete. It's like virtually they're being told, don't worry about this one, just get through it, the next game matters more, and which is totally wrong.
Okay, Tottenham, who are their opponents, signed Jedson Fernandes on loan from Benfica initially with the option to buy at the end of the 18-month period for £40 million. He's 21 years of age. He was signed by Benfica from his local team at 10 years of age for €240 and 25 new footballs. Same sort of academy as João Felix, talented crop. Is he what they need, Alex Crook?
Well, certainly midfield is a problem for them, especially with the Christian Eriksen situation. But what would worry me as a Spurs fan is the sort of message that Mourinho is putting out over this signing. I'm not convinced this is necessarily a Jose signing, that he was top of the shopping list. And I just don't think that's a great start at a new club, especially with a manager like Jose Mourinho, who isn't afraid to ostracise players. He's done that already with one or two at Spurs. In recent weeks.
Ian Dombele.
Well, exactly.
He's under about four buses.
So, is he going to solve all their problems? I'm not sure he is, because, let's face it, their big issue is defensively, and even more now, they haven't got Harry Kane at the other end. I think this is going to be a very testing period for Spurs, and I'm not sure this signing is necessarily the answer.
And Paul Parker, that is key, isn't it? It's Harry this, Harry that, but defence is the biggest problem. This is a team that have kept one clean sheet in 13 matches under Mourinho.
I'm using a word before I start, is deja vu. It's all happening again. I'm seeing a Manchester United situation. He's going to be picking on people. The signings are always going to be a little bit questionable. And we have to say, what difference is it going to be any better for him than what it was under when Pochettino was there? Is it any better? No, because Daniel Levy is still running that club and running everything around it. So I am really, in theory, looking at their situation. I'm looking up defensively. I think he's upset a few already, when you might think about the likes of Danny Rose, who hasn't been playing a lot recently. He's only just come in, what, the game before last? There's a lot of problems going on now.
But he explained that, hasn't he? He's explained the Danny Rose situation. He said, basically, you know, the way I want to play is with a lopsided back four, which is basically a back four, which is a back three when we're defending, or on the attack. So we have Ben Davis, who is the left back, but when we're on the attack, we attack down the right-hand side. Aurier switches across and becomes a wing-back, and Davis comes part of the back three. He tried to do it that with Vertonghen against Brighton on Boxing Day. Didn't work. Tried to bring Danny Rose into that mix, but Danny Rose is just a pure left-back, so he can't do that job. And Ryan Sessegnon is still learning the position. So he's sort of saying, the reason I haven't played those players is because actually they don't fit into the system that I want to play. And he has to play that system because Serge Aurier cannot be trusted to play as a right back. Yeah. And he hasn't got anybody else.
Then go and buy a defender and not a midfielder.
Ben Davis is a left back. As simple as that. Or you're talking about him playing maybe one of the three and be virtually becoming a left-sided centre-half. Listen, as far as I'm concerned...
Which is what he does for Wales.
Yeah, but Mourinho doesn't really look at attacking football. He doesn't work that way. He would stick with his four at the back just to make and virtually tell certain players they only can go over a certain area. They've got to stop still and be like a 10-year-old who played right back. He just stands on the edge of the penalty box.
There were certain players that you knew weren't allowed to go 10 yards over the halfway line, which is why even when they were 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go, you were like, "Well, you're not exactly throwing everything at it here, are you?" Anyway, let's move on because we got our first in a new feature where we each take a game and attempt to preview it in 60 seconds. Paul and Alex, we've got three matches to preview: City versus Palace, Saints versus Wolves, Arsenal versus Sheffield United. We'll draw the game out of a hat like an FA Cup draw. So, Paul, if you could just hold the velvet bag for me there and just have a shuffle of the balls. Thank you very much. Just twirl those around. Lovely. Crook, if you could just stick your hand in there and pull one out. I'll go first, so you just give me a game.
Right, let's build up some suspense here. Here we go. OK, Sam, you've got Manchester City against Crystal Palace and your time starts now.
OK, I did the first game between these two and Pep and I had a row afterwards. From what I remember of that game, City won quite easily, didn't they? It's not the first time, actually, that we've fallen out of Crystal Palace, because we once fell out because I asked him about how well Yaya Toure had done to get back into the team, and Pep had a go at me saying, well, he was always part of the team and I don't want to talk about individuals. That despite the fact that Yaya Toure had made his first appearance of the season that year and scored both City goals in a victory. Anyway, this match. The story's pre-match probably going to centre around Crystal Palace, Andros Townsend and scoring that wonderful goal. But actually, I think if you look at the stats... in the Premier League, at least, I think Manchester City, over five previous games, apart from that 3-2 loss last year, have won all of them by a scoreline of about 18-0. Roy Hodgson's done quite well. They aren't a particularly good team. They aren't a particularly bad team. They're just a team, aren't they? They're well organised. They've had a bit of sporadic devilment in Zaha and Ayew, but they've won what?
Yeah, that was your cue to stop talking.
Will that do?
Well, you went over. Right, okay, you went over. You went over.
Okay, don't get cheeky. Right, let's... Paul, can you give the little velvet bag a shake again? Thank you very much. And I'll pull the ball out this time. Alex, you can have a go next. Right, what have we got here for Alex Crook? Ooh. Southampton Wolves, your time starts now.
Well, as you know, the South Coast is not my specialist subject, but I'm quite happy with this one. Southampton, banging form. Been absolutely sensational since that 9-0 defeat against Leicester. Everybody wanted Ralph Hasenhüttl sacked then. The fans, the media, even some of the players, I think, thought he was doomed. But the board stuck with him, and my word, has it paid off. And what about the form of Danny Ings? Has to be in the next England squad. For me, with Callum Wilson floundering at Bournemouth, he's almost a shoo-in to go to the European Championships, and he's got a tremendous goal-scoring record at the moment. Looks like he's going to score every time he goes on the pitch. That will be a big worry for Wolves, especially as we sat through that game last night, and for me, for the final half an hour, Wolves looked absolutely dead on their feet. It was their 38th game of the season. They've only used 19 players, I think, across their Premier League campaign, which is almost the lowest in the division. I think this is a great time for Southampton to play them. No wins in five for Wolves. I think the Ralph Hasenhüttl revival is going to continue at St Mary's.
There was a lot of waffle and filling there, didn't you think, Paul?
What?
I'm not going to say anything because I've got to go next.
Okay, Alex, just to delve into that velvet bag, there's only one game left to preview, but just confirm it for us.
Okay. It's very hard to build up the suspense when there is actually only one tie left in there. But I will do a bit more just to add to Paul Parker's anxiety. And I can tell you that the game that you're going to preview is Arsenal against Sheffield United. Go.
I have to turn around and say this game is about two teams. One can defend as good as anybody. The other one can't defend. When you look at Sheffield United initially away from home, their form has been not bad at all, to be perfect honest. As good as anybody when you look at their form, the way they play defensively, the three at the back are so tight together, don't allow much space for teams to get in behind them. When you look at their midfield, Lundstrom, Fleck and Oliver Norwood, they're industrious, but they've got good creativity. The only thing they're lacking really is an out and out goal scorer, but the two up front who generally play, Moussa or even McGoldrick, they are grafters. They never stop working, they're dogged, they really close teams down from the front. When we talk about Arsenal, they've been revitalised by the signing, or sorry, I should say, the new manager, Arteta. He made a big difference in their first home win of the season against Manchester United. You saw even Ozil, Aubameyang, Lacazette tracking back, making tackles.
And that's it. I mean, Paul, that was very impressive. I enjoyed that. And just looking at your face as well, he's just staring into space, not referring to any notes at all, right off the top of your head. Very impressive. Apart from the fact that you did say Sheffield United's away form is not bad, but it's as good as anybody's. Which one is it?
Oh, now it's picking me out now, is it? Digging me. One, I'll tell you what, you give me one hand and you took away with the other. You've nailed me, by the way. You've nailed me.
No, but do you know why he's done that? He's picked on us both because he was the only one, and this is his feature, and he's the only one who couldn't keep it within 60 seconds. We were time perfect, weren't we?
It is true. Right, let's get to the two.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
By 5:30 on Talk Sport with Nigel Adderley behind the mic. Newcastle take on Chelsea. Chelsea won here last season, very early in the campaign. But Newcastle have actually got a really good record against them at St James Park. Before last season, Chelsea hadn't won there since December 2011, winning 4 of the previous 5 Newcastle United. Can they cause an upset here against Chelsea, do you think, Paul?
Well, we can't bet against it because we just don't know what Chelsea's going to turn up. When they're good, they're good. When they're poor everywhere. Especially more than anything, their biggest problems has been defensively, where a lot of the time with Zouma playing, it does cause them problems. But you look at midfield, they're young and they've got a bit of creativity, but their biggest problem is scoring goals. They don't finish teams off when they get them under pressure. They nail them down. They get in and around, but they do not finish teams off early enough in games.
Yeah, Chelsea have tended to quite succeed though on their travels, haven't they? Their 2 defeats in 8 have come at home. Do you think they're better suited to playing away from home? But will that necessarily be the case against a Newcastle team that actually don't care at all about possession and are quite happy to play like an away team? And just soak up loads of pressure, have like 15% possession of the ball, and then try and counter-attack.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Newcastle's results, by and large, have probably been better than most people expected over the course of the season, especially after the start they had. But I am hearing dissenting voices on the North East about the style of play that they've adapted under Steve Bruce.
Come on, when do you ever hear anything other than dissenting voices in the North East? It doesn't matter who's in charge, where they finish, how many pounds they spend on a new signing. There's always dissenting voices, isn't there?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, Steve Bruce wasn't the most popular appointment. I think he's done very well. But I think you're right. They're not a team who are going to go at Chelsea and allow them to try and hit on the counter. I think this could be quite an attritional game, actually. But Chelsea were pretty clinical in their last game against Burnley. If they can get supply into Tammy Abraham, I think they will have some joy against that Newcastle defence. And you just can't see where the goals are coming from as far as Newcastle are concerned. Joe Ellington is getting a lot of stick, and deservedly so. They spent a huge amount of money on him. Doesn't look like a player who's going to score goals in the Premier League. Not been a bad few weeks for Almiron in that respect, but I just don't think Newcastle have got enough. If Chelsea can carve out chances, they should win the game. And it could be a pivotal weekend for them. If they win the game, United lose at Liverpool, as we expect them to, that race for fourth place could well be over.
16 goals in 31 appearances this season for club and country. Is Tammy Abraham the next cab off the rank for England with Kane injured, do you think, Paul Parker?
I think there's too many out there at the moment. There's no one 100%, but the one thing is there's going to be an opportunity because they will get, if you can say it for England, they'll get a run of game. They'll get an opportunity. Already we've seen Mr. South Coast next to me throwing in Danny Ings. But I have to concur in a certain way. You can throw people in when they score goals because they tried that with Charlie Austin scoring goals. But when you look at Austin and you compare Danny Ings, you're looking at one who has got enough about him, can adapt his game to play international football rather than Charlie Austin, who one pace, which isn't even a good pace, to be perfectly honest, and is a goal scorer and nothing else. Danny Ings can bring people in, but he can score all kinds of goals. I like him.
But Tammy Abraham is someone who's been brought up in the England system. He's played for England already, scored for England already. He's a younger member of that squad. Does that not go in his favour?
Yeah, he'll be the favourite, won't he? Because Gareth Southgate has known him pretty much his entire career. I guess the only caveat to that would be that it was actually Gareth Southgate who gave Danny Ings his England under-21 debut. So again, he's a player who's on the radar. But I think if there's a pecking order, it would have gone Harry Kane, Tammy Abraham, Callum Wilson. I think it probably now goes Harry Kane if he's fit, Tammy Abraham, Danny Ings.
I would just like the next person who comes in to do well so we can actually start talking about Harry Kane and Abraham. Talk about both of them rather than like living that world like Spurs do and just talking Harry Kane's not here. There's a problem with England. We don't really want
but
to be that way.
But let's just give up on Harry Kane because, you know, if you look at the injury that he has had, he has a detached muscle in his hamstring. In order for him to get fit and ready for the European Championships, he's basically got to have some sort of miracle cure. It's not going to happen, is it? I mean, ultimately, if you speak to any physio, they say, looking at the injury that he has had, you're expected to be ready for pre-season, not for a European Championship. And look at what happened last year when he rushed himself back for the Champions League final. I mean, he might as well have not been there.
Well, it's the same every time he comes back. They seem to rush him back, or he rushes back, I think, because he wants to score goals and he's a passenger. So I'd like to think that Gareth Southgate is clever enough to know that already. He's looking to the fact of, doesn't matter if he says he's fit, and I hope we don't take another player into a tournament who is carrying an injury.
OK, relegation worries have been haunting Norwich since they were promoted to the Premier League, but for the Cherries, it's starting to get real.
Now here's Callum Wilson into the penalty area, slides it down the line, little pull back, and there's the opening goal, and it's gone to Bournemouth, and it's a rare goal for Dan Gosling. He scored at Stamford Bridge a couple of weeks ago, he's done it again here, Bournemouth 1, Arsenal 0.
Back central to Vrančić, just wants to try and create a space for a shot. Norwich still have it. Play a lovely little 1-2 in the penalty area. Appeals for handball. Cantwell's there. Cantwell scores.
Now here's a lovely pass from Reece Pookie, who's clear to Inchu inside the box, and Timo Pookie has steered in. The Pookie party is back up and running at the King Power.
Bournemouth spent 85% of their TV money last season on wages. They have an injury list as long as the arm. They have the youngest average 11, and they have lost 9 of the last 11 matches. What's the remedy here, or are both these two down, Alex Crook?
Apart from that, it's all going brilliantly for Eddie Howe, isn't it? I think this is the derby of the doomed, to be honest. Norwich aren't going to get out of it. They haven't got enough quality. They didn't spend enough money. Bournemouth, as you've already articulated there, have spent money since they came into the Premier League. They spent it in the wrong places for me. Jordan Ibe, who I'm told that you know, they're desperate to get off the wage bill this month. They'd probably take those 25 footballs that you were talking about as a transfer fee earlier. Nobody wants him because he's rubbish. Dominic Solanke isn't going to score goals in the Premier League. And defensively now, they're too reliant on Nathan Ake, who we talked about players being rushed back from injury. He came back early against Watford, didn't look fit, and actually that's probably scuppered his move to Chelsea now because they were watching that game, and I think Frank Lampard is having second thoughts.
Are you maybe being a little bit unfair and picking on the ones that haven't worked out for Bournemouth rather than the bargains that have? Because there's been some successful transfers down there as well, hasn't there?
Yeah, but by and large, they were the players who they signed to get them up from the Championship. Callum Wilson came for a small fee from Coventry. He's been superb, although again,
Ryan Fraser wasn't.
Ryan Fraser was signed when they were in the Championship as well. He's another. actually sent him out on loan to Ipswich Town.
He didn't play in the Championship, did he?
Well, no, but he's not a player they've signed since they came into the Premier League. If you draw up a list of players that Eddie Howe has signed as a Premier League manager, there are far more misses than hits. I think that's a big problem. And listen, this is not me chucking Eddie Howe under the bus, but I don't think just because he's worked miracles...
It does sound like it.
I don't think just because he's worked miracles, Paul, for the last decade, he should be immune to criticism. He's bought the wrong players. He's setting the team up wrong at the moment. They're trying to play their way out from the back against Watford with a rookie goalkeeper and a 96-year-old centre-back in Simon Francis. They were asking for trouble, shot themselves in the foot. I actually messaged you 20 minutes into that game and said Bournemouth are going to get punished for a mistake. They did. The confidence has been sapped out the team. The life has been sapped out the fans. I can't see any way they're going to stay up at the moment. But this is not me advocating Eddie Howe to be fired, because if they do go down, he's the best man to bring them back up, in my opinion, and have a bit of a cleanse of the squad.
It should be an entertaining scrap, though, shouldn't it? I mean, they're both so open, apart from the fact that Bournemouth couldn't finish an ice cream right now. But there's usually goals between these two meet. I think there's been more than three goals in five of the last seven meetings between the two. OK, let's get to the butler. Great to see you. Have you taken anybody home this week?
No, it's January.
No, right. OK, so no one's. You're not ripe for the picking at the moment. There's no opportunity for you to go out and be the good Samaritan that we know you are.
No. Not so far. That's you know, January is a very, very quiet month.
Quiet month for the chorister who likes to save lives. Could you save our dream teams then, please? Instead, West Ham have won just one of their last seven home games, but Darren Randolph is back and straight into the team. Fabianski is out for about 4 or 5 weeks, as I understand it. Will he solve your dream team goalkeeping crisis, Darren Randolph, do you think?
Well, potentially, but it really depends if West Ham stop conceding goals. They've conceded 33 this season, which isn't the worst in the league, of course. But they're edging closer and closer to the drop zone, which I'm slightly concerned about from a West Ham point of view. I'm slightly disappointed that our good friend Tom Rennie's not in the studio today to give him some jip about the fact that they've got protests coming up and the fans aren't happy, and they're also only a point off the relegation zone. But you know. Randolph could potentially go straight in your team, but I think look elsewhere is my tip.
I think they're in a bit of trouble still, West Ham. I did the game for TalkSport Live against Sheffield United, and they were really poor. And you look at the next half a dozen games, they've got to play Liverpool twice, haven't they? I think they've got Everton as well, obviously rejuvenated under Ancelotti, and one more of the big clubs. So I don't think West Ham are out of the woods yet.
No, Liverpool at home and Liverpool away in the space of about 25 days, which is a very difficult sort of turnaround. They've got Tottenham away from home, Arsenal away from home, Manchester City away from home, Chelsea at home. And that's before we even get to the middle of April. I mean, that is a very tricky run of fixtures for David Moyes to come in and take over. I toyed with taking Sebastian Allaire out this week and going for Cenk Toshan, but I thought, actually, I'll wait till next week. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. Allaire's still the high top scorer for West Ham this season with 79 points. He's in there at a reasonable price, 3.2 million. He's also actually the highest rated player on Who Scored, which is where we get our stats ratings from as well. So he's putting in some all right performances. Cenk Toshan hasn't really been pulling up too many trees so far this season as well. But I think keep him in.
He's got
to
move, hasn't he? He's going to be thrown in by Palace.
Yeah, there is that. And, you know, you'd expect him to be slightly more potent than Christian Benteke has been for Palace in the last couple of years. But I think, you know, the tip is probably just hold off for a couple of weeks. His price won't go up too drastically in the next fortnight or so. So hold off until then.
It's all about looking for bargains. Burnley, 4 defeats in a row and 7 in the last 9, take on the Foxes. Leicester City, who have had a little bit of a wobble. So do we risk sticking Chris Wood in against his old team, the immutable law of the X?
Well, again, Chris Wood is their highest point scorer as well, but we've only 62. Burnley, kind of, I think they're one of the ones
that are
struggling too. I actually had a quick look earlier today about this sort of the relegation scrap. Burnley should really, I think, be looking over their shoulder. The last time a team in 18th place had more points than Aston Villa's 21 this season was back in 2011 when Wolves had 22. So it does show how tight it could get as we head towards the final third of the season.
You wouldn't pick a Burnley defender either, would you? Because they've conceded 9 goals in their last 4 games. Nick Pope was all over the place against Chelsea. So any value in the Leicester team?
Well, I think Ricardo Pereira probably will be back on it again this weekend. He got minus one last week, which is the first time in ages that he's recorded minus points. And Vardy actually coming back in the team, I think it was a blip, really, against Southampton. At least I'd like to think so. I wouldn't want to entertain the idea that Leicester, now that they're in such a strong position, would start like their form to start falling off a cliff, because they look secure for a top four spot this season. I can't see one of United, Sheffield United or Wolves kind of catching them either for a top four spot. But I think it'll be a real shame for them if they were to kind of keep on losing games. They've lost 3 of the last 5. So
it's a lack of squad depth, isn't it? You know, they're one of those teams who need their first 11 fit every week. Because if you scratch beneath the surface, particularly at the back, if one of their defenders gets injured, suddenly Wes Morgan is called into action. No disrespect to Wes Morgan, he was a Premier League winner, but clearly his best days are behind him.
Yeah, he's 95. Andrew, thank you very much, as always, for your contribution. We appreciate it, and we will see you in the next episode of this wonderful podcast.
Thanks very much, Sam.
Quick word on Brighton against Aston Villa. If Brighton win this, I think we see Burnley, West Ham, Villa and Watford fighting to avoid that one place alongside Bournemouth and Norwich. You said it's the derby of the doomed, so we'll go with that. But Villa have brought Pepe Reina in. Will that help, Paul Parker?
Just to be honest, no. I really don't see. I mean, Tom Heaton is a good goalkeeper, really, really good goalkeeper. But when you're digging down and Pepe Reina's allowed to come away from the club he did, and then you're getting him at Villa, you have to turn around and say, no, I don't think he's going to make it. He was great in his prime for Liverpool, but now, no.
They've been unlucky with injuries, haven't they? McGinn is a big miss, ankle fracture, Heaton, Wesley, but they do have Danny Drinkwater, so everything should be fine. Ultimately, they're in a situation, aren't they, where they've been unlucky with a bit of recruitment, they've been unlucky with a few injuries, but they've also played far too open in football matches, which, if they do that against Brighton, they're probably going to lose, because Brighton are a very well-choreographed footballing team, Alex.
Yeah, we were talking about Eddie Howe and the job he's done at Bournemouth. And when Chris Hughton was sacked at the end of last season by Brighton, I think there was a lot of sympathy, and rightly so, because, again, he was a manager who took them up from the lower divisions, stabilised them in the Premier League. It seemed a brutal decision
at
the time.
You got him sacked as well, didn't you?
I don't have that power, sadly. Otherwise, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would have gone a long time ago. But but I have to say, with Brighton and the stats, as I'm sure you're going to tell me, don't back this up, because I think they've actually got fewer points at this stage this season than they had at the same time last year under Chris Hughton. They are a much better side this season, and they're a much better side than their points tally indicates. But they're much more watchable, and I think they play a better brand of football that eventually, with patience, is going to pay off. They are going to pick up enough points. For me, I'm not counting Brighton as a side who might go down.
So Norwich are a really good team. I mean, because they play nice football.
No.
They're going to go down, but they play nice football.
Norwich are a good team.
They've got less points than last year, but they play good football, so it's okay.
It's not just that they play good football. It's also, if you look at the fixtures, they've played far more difficult games. They've played away from home already against most of the top sides from last season. So they've got a run of games now between now and the end of the season, which should see them stay up. They've got a goal scorer in Neil Mopay. They've got a playmaker in Leandro Trossard, of whom I think there's more to come. Defensively, they're still relatively resolute. They've had some really good performances, particularly against the better sides. They played Arsenal off the park at Emirates Stadium. They played Spurs off the park at home. I think Graham Potter is a good manager. And as I say, when you're looking at the permutations, who could go down? Brighton, for me, are not on the list.
Okay, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but Paul Parker, it is true, just because it feels good doesn't make it right.
You are right about that, but I can see where Alex is going, to be honest. I've seen Brighton twice this season, and they're definitely easier on the eye, and there is more about them. There's more behind them. Their fans are behind them. Graham Potter will be given time because the simple reason is everything he's trying is working and people are seeing it as a positive step forward from what it was before. Maybe the fact of Chris going, everyone got up, because everyone likes Chris. Chris is such a lovely man, like him. But maybe he wasn't brave enough to play that kind of football. Graham Potter's come in, and regardless of it, he's gone in there and he's played it straight away with the same players, and now he's reaping the rewards.
Their last five home games are quite interesting, though, aren't they? They've got Crystal Palace, which is a massive derby match, Arsenal at home, Manchester United at home, Liverpool at home, Manchester City at home before they finish with Newcastle, which could be quite a tense game towards the end of the season. So, you know, it's all right saying that they've got points in the bag and they're going to be OK, and I'm sure they are, because actually I think they are better than Villa, better than Norwich, better than Bournemouth, and probably better than Watford as well. Maybe that's a toss-up between the two. But ultimately, it's not guaranteed that they're out of the mire.
No, it's not guaranteed. Of course it isn't. They're just not, in my head, one of the teams who I think will be scrapping come the end of the season. And you mentioned those fixtures, actually. Liverpool and Manchester City might not be the worst teams to play at home at the end of the season, because the title will already be won. They could both still be focusing on European glory. They could
and they've dropped so many
teams.
Points already, haven't they?
Well, they've not fielded weakened teams yet, have they, really? He's out for me today, isn't he? I think, but just to go back to the point I was making, I think football now, and Gary Neville has already alluded to this, is about more than just winning matches. I think teams now, because of the sheer volume of games on television, the sheer exposure, the money in the game, they want to be entertained. And ultimately, got rid of Chris Hughton.
Can I just stop it there, by the way? I've been saying that for ages about Manchester United, because Sir Alex was about this. He said one of the... In there for him as being a Manchester United manager was, first and foremost, he had to entertain.
Yeah. But I think that's filtered down now.
But I've said that so many times, and I got persecuted by people. It's just about winning. Entertaining doesn't matter. And now because Gary Neville has said it, everyone's going, oh, yeah, he's right. What a load of rubbish that. Now, if you're at a big club, doesn't matter how you play and what it's about. Winning's important. Of course it's important. But there is a way that you play. And Manchester United have got a style of play. Tottenham have got a style of play. Liverpool have had their style. And they still play that way. When I played against them in the Masters, the old boys, they played in a certain fashion that befitted that football club. Mm. And now Gary Neville has come out and said it. Now football should be... Mm. All about okay. that.
Wasn't Gary Neville who took your place, was it? Any chance at Man United?
The sack master.
The words out of my mouth.
The sack master has come in and had a go at me. I can't believe it. He's dug me out. I need to twist this around. I need you two to sit next to each other and me the other side.
Let's get to the commentator's curse. Listen, we loved you at Chelsea after Gary Neville had taken your place. It was fine. I mean, it might only have been four games, but it was fine.
Is it? You should have told the others when I first turned up at the training ground.
It wasn't a training ground, was it? It was just a park with a lot of wind. Here's the commentator's curse. Players that we're going to put the mockers on this week by giving a statistical reason as to why they will do well in this round of matches. I'm going to start this off because we sort of already alluded to it. Mo Salah running down the wing. He didn't feature in the game with Manchester United in October, but in four previous games against Manchester United, he's never scored against them. Mane has only ever scored once, and Firmino, who hasn't scored at Anfield since March, by the way, has never scored against Manchester United in the Premier League. So, what price, all three, to score this weekend? Just 9-1.
Wow.
That's like basically a first goal scorer.
It's not generous.
I mean, unbelievable. It's not the biggest odds in the world, is it? What you got for me, Crookie?
Those odds will probably come in if Phil Jones had even near the team as well. Mine's about goal scorers as well, or maybe non-scoring strikers. Callum Wilson, we talked about him a lot on this podcast. I mean, it looked, didn't it, when he signed that massive contract, he became Bournemouth's highest paid player in the summer, that he had the world at his feet. He was going to the European Championships. He was a genuine rival for Harry Kane. Not anymore, he isn't. Not only has he not scored for weeks on end in the Premier League, can you believe this? He hasn't had a shot on target since October the 6th.
Wow.
Wow. That is amazing. What a stat. Where did you get that from?
You know, hours of research digging that one out. But I mean, that is incredible, isn't it? And, and that really is a microcosm of Bournemouth's problems.
Incredible. Right, here is Paul Parker with his commentator's curse.
Right, this one is going away from players. It's going to the people who look after him. It's the managers. So this one is Everton's manager, Carlo Ancelotti, I should say. I got that one out well. Failed to win any of his four Premier League meetings with David Moyes in his previous stint in the competition. But can I just add a little bit onto that as well, just the other side? David Moyes is the only manager the Italian has faced more than twice without winning in the English top flight.
But didn't they come together in an FA Cup final of 2009? Is that right? Did they come together in the FA Cup final of 2009?
Yes, they did, didn't they, when Everton took the lead early on. Is that right? And
after
Chelsea went
seconds,
on to win the game.
Yeah, and Chelsea won.
I think your stats are Premier League 2-1. Related.
Yeah, it's all,
Yeah, definitely. OK, thank you very much to Paul Parker and to Alex Crook. We're back on Tuesday when we've got a Premier League preview because there's a midweek round of fixtures. You can download this podcast and rate and review it on Apple, on Google, on Spotify or on Acast. Or you can just ask your smart speaker to play the Game Day Preview podcast from Talk Sport. You've got Danny Kelly's record book to come over the weekend and The Verdict with Laura and Adrian. Thanks very much for listening.
That was a Game Day Premier League preview show, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.